Chapter 49. Jesse sat with Jen on the balcony outside his living room and looked at the harbor as it got dark. Amber was sitting in the doorway drinking coffee. She had on tan shorts and a powder blue t-shirt and too much makeup, but she was, Jesse thought, beginning to look a little less like a punk cliché. "Have you done any research on the Crown Estate?" Jesse said. He was sipping scotch. Jen had a glass of Riesling. "You mean the estate itself?" Jen said. "Yeah." "No, you think I should?" "Yes." "Because?" "Because you can and I don't have the resources," Jesse said. "Why do you think it needs to be researched?" Jen said. "I think Miriam Fiedler's interest in the issue is too large," Jesse said.
"Explain," Jen said.
"Suit says she's asking questions about me and the department and the murder, and can I be bribed?"
"Suit?" Amber said. "The guy that was here with me and Molly?"
"Yes," Jesse said.
"Why would Miriam Fiedler be asking Suit questions?" Jen said.
Jesse smiled. Jen looked at him.
"Why?" Jen said.
"Remember what I told you about Sissy Hathaway?" Jesse said. "Suit likes older women."
"Suit and Miriam Fiedler?" Jen said.
"Suit's fucking somebody?" Amber said from the doorway.
"Well put," Jesse said.
"So maybe this Miriam Fiedler or whatever is fucking him so he'll tell us stuff," Amber said.
"Maybe," Jesse said.
"So," Amber said, "big deal. It happens all the time."
"You think?" Jesse said.
"How else do you get anything?" Amber said.
"Sometimes women have sex with men because they like them," Jen said. "Even sometimes because they love them."
"Yeah, you bet," Amber said. "You like him?"
She nodded at Jesse.
"Yes," Jen said. "I probably love him."
"So how come you don't fuck him?"
"Right now, it doesn't seem like a good idea," Jen said.
"So you like him, but you won't fuck him. And you love him, but you're divorced."
"That's about right," Jen said.
"You ever fuck some guy to get what you want?" Amber said.
"Yes," Jen said.
"See," Amber said, "no big deal."
"It is a big deal," Jen said, "because every time you do it, you feel weak and worthless."
"Maybe you do," Amber said. "Not me."
"You will," Jen said. "It's cumulative."
"Huh?"
"The more of it you do," Jen said, "the more you feel bad."
"I like it," Amber said. "When I'm balling a guy, I'm in charge, you know?"
"Like Esteban," Jesse said. Amber didn't say anything for a moment. Then her eyes filled, and she turned and went through the living room to her bedroom.
"You hurt her feelings," Jen said.
"Esteban hurt her feelings," Jesse said. "And you reminded her of it." "She can't be lying to herself," Jesse said. "How good is that for her?"
"Maybe she has so little else," Jen said.
"You ever see The Iceman Cometh?"
"No."
Jen shrugged.
"Doesn't matter," she said.
"My parenting skills are limited," Jesse said. "But I'm pretty sure the truth is good."
"Maybe it's not always," Jen said.
"Maybe it isn't," Jesse said, "but I'm not too sure about lying either."
"I know."
They were silent. Jesse sipped his scotch. Jen stared out at the harbor where the darkness had thickened enough so that the lights on some of the yachts were showing.
"I can check the legal stuff about the Crown Estate," Jen said.
"Deed, title, whatever. Hell, I can probably get an intern to do that."
"Might be useful," Jesse said.
"I'll see what I can find out," Jen said. "Now I'm going into the bedroom and pat Amber on the shoulder for a little bit."
"Maternal impulse?" Jesse said.
"Damned if I know," Jen said, and went inside. Jesse put his feet up on the railing and looked at the harbor. Across it, the lights were going on in houses along Paradise Neck. Suppers were being cooked. Spouses were having a cocktail together while it cooked. Jesse looked at his moisture-beaded glass. He liked the look of it, with the dark gold booze and the translucent silver ice, still half full. And he could have another if he wished. Two drinks was reasonable. And after the two drinks, he and Jen, and maybe Amber, would have supper in a not distasteful caricature of the lives being lived across the harbor.
"I wonder how much Crow drinks," Jesse thought.
Chapter 50.
"It was Crow," Francisco said on the phone.
"I didn't see him," Romero said.
"It was Crow," Francisco said. "Forget about him. Get Amber and bring her home."
"He killed Larson," Romero said.
"There's a million other Larsons," Francisco said. "Bring the kid home."
"I don't like having some guy shoot one of my people and walk away," Romero said.
"I don't give a fuck what you like. Farm Crow out to the local gangbangers. Bring the kid home now.
How much to the gangbangers? Romero said.
10. Same as if they brought the kid home.
10, Romero said, to kill Crow?
That's more money than they can even count, Francisco said. How many are there?
Maybe a dozen, Romero said.
So if Crow kills a few, no sweat, Francisco said. Still plenty left to do the job.
10 grand, Romero said.
And they'll be happy to get it, Francisco said. Turn Crow over to them. Bring the kid home. We got a lot of business to do down here.
Okay, Lou, Romero said. The phone went dead. Romero folded his cell phone and slid it back in his pants pocket. He looked at the other two men, Bobby Chacon and a guy named Mongo Estella, for whom Bobby had to translate. We give the Crow hit to Esteban, Romero said to Bobby, and bring the girl home.
We know where the girl is, Bobby said.
No, Romero said. Bobby nodded and spoke to Mongo in Spanish. Romero started the escalade. First thing, Romero said, we make the deal with Esteban and his people.
You think they're good enough? Bobby said.
No, but they are maybe crazy enough. Crazy might work better than good with Crow. Bobby nodded. Driving carefully behind them, Crow was cautious. They would be looking for him now. But the Escalade was big and uncommon on the streets of Marshport, and Crow stayed with them easily enough. He was driving a grayish-beige Toyota, of which there were usually 3 or 4 in sight at all times. At Horn Street, the Escalade parked. Two of the men got out and walked down the alley. Crow turned right and then left and parked on a parallel street where he could see the Escalade through a parking lot. In 10 minutes, the two men came out onto Horn Street and got into the Escalade and drove east. Crow drove parallel for a couple of blocks and then swung up onto the same street several cars behind them. He followed them for a while and then turned off left, took the next right, followed them in a rough parallel course until he passed them, and turned back to their street, coming out ahead of them. He drove ahead of them, watching them in the mirror until they turned off. Then he U-turned and fell in behind them on the road to Paradise. The Escalade parked on Sewell Street, near the house where Fiona Francisco had lived. Crow parked up on Washington Street where he could see them. The same two men got out and went to the house. The front door was locked. There was a lot of foot traffic. After a moment, the two men walked around the house and Crow couldn't see them. He waited. After about 15 minutes, the two men came back and got into the Escalade. The big car drove down Sewell Street and parked on the wharf outside the Grey Gull. All three men got out and went into the restaurant. Crow drove in and parked at the far end of the wharf. Crow sat and looked at the restaurant, and in a short while, the three men appeared on the outside deck and sat at a table. Crow sank a little lower in the front seat of his car so that he could just see through the steering wheel. They had a drink. They read the menus. Crow studied them. Why had they gone to the house? Were they looking for him? No. They wouldn't look for him there. They were looking for the girl. If they found her, they'd take her straight to Miami. So who was going to kill him? Francisco would not let it slide. It wasn't how he worked. No one was allowed to cross him. Crow sat in his car and watched the men drink and eat on the deck. He could probably step out of the car and kill all three of them. Too easy. Crow wanted the war to evolve a little. Such a good opportunity, though. He got out and walked between the parked cars to the near edge of the wharf. Across about 10 feet of harbor water, he fired one shot and hit Mongo in the back of the head. Mongo pitched forward onto the table. The tableware scattered. Romero and Bobby Chacon hit the floor behind the table, fumbling for weapons as they went down. By the time they got them out and squirmed into a position to see, Crow was gone.